last time on Zero Issues.
Let me tell you, I'm on my very last disposable razor. Do I have to switch to a safety razor? I'm very scared.
This may appear to be only monkey business, but in reality, it's very serious, lady.
Zero Issues Comic Podcast. Zero Issues Comic Podcast.
So I just went to the dollar store and bought like 8 disposable razors for $2.
Right on.
Yeah.
Thank God. I was so worried.
I was sick for a week, but I'm glad that problem solved itself very quickly.
How is the diarrhea?
It's fine.
Bri, you're cutting out.
So I guess
little bit of a lag.
No, it's running down his
leg.
So
I guess that's how everybody learns that I'm Bri.
Mm-hmm. The one with diarrhea.
I hate you.
Look, you look great.
Also a lot.
Even with the diarrhea.
Because you pooped out all that, you know.
Yikes. What can I say but...
This is a podcast for adults.
Mm-hmm. It's the Bri cleanse.
It works.
Yep. He's Bri with diarrhea. I'm Merc with other issues.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Kyle over there.
And I'm perfect in every way.
Yeah,
I'm perfect in every way, like
yes.
The guy from Fury Road's little brother. He had a baby brother who was perfect in every way.
I like it.
I rewatched that a couple weeks ago. It's a pretty good movie. You know it's a less good movie? Stay tuned to find out.
Exactly.
Da, 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 da.
Current Zero News Flash.
I literally don't even have his name down. I just wrote Flash Guy fired.
Hartley Sawyer is his name, and he played Ralph Dibny the Elongated Man. And I gotta say...
And that's totally a fake name, Hartley...
Sawyer. God. Yeah, that doesn't sound real.
That's not real at all. No.
Which is great, because that means he can disappear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he was fired from the Flash due to, I guess, a number of tweets. Here's the lesson: here is don't tweet.
Yeah, I'm considering. I very rarely use Twitter these days. I'm sure I've said some really dumb stuff in the past, though, and I'm very much considering just deleting my account.
Yeah,
you know, in case I'm ever famous.
Yeah. I'm sure we all will be.
Guess what? Guess what, Kyle? That's the wrong lesson to take from this.
Well, that's true. Exactly. And to get to that point, so basically, a lot of tweets or posts online he made between 2011 and 2014 specifically came out that were like very racist and misogynistic, and some were very violent. And legitimately, I read some of these and was just like, oh yeah, that's not. Good.
Were they okay? I only saw like one or two examples, and they were not. They were really weird examples, and I'm like, that's not a very good example of that. But if it got worse, then yeah, okay.
They varied. Some of them were a few. I saw at first, I was like, oh, that's. I mean, like that's not good, but it's whatever. But then I saw some that were like legitimately like, oh yeah, that's pretty messed up.
Yeah.
So I can understand it, especially you know just. Yeah, so he was fired. I know that I think Eric Wallace, I think, was a producer on the show. I might have the right name wrong because I didn't write it down.
Yep.
Put out a post like strongly condemning, you know, that and basically being like, oh, we're horrified to read these things. We can't have anything to do with it. Grant Gustin basically kind of said the same. So he's pretty much out of there. That's just what's going on. On his end, he apologized and said he was like really ashamed that he, you know, thought that those things were funny at any point. You know, it seemed like a pretty sincere apology, but I mean, again, you know, that's not, it's still pretty bad. It's unfortunate in a lot of ways. I sincerely hope that he has actually, you know, grown since then and will continue to. And I feel like just because you might believe things or believe that certain things are funny at some point in your life or development, I mean, whatever age you are, frankly, I feel like, you know, everything is a learning opportunity and a growing opportunity, and people should be allowed to grow and change and get another second chance.
They need to have that opportunity to become better than they were. Yeah.
But I do understand immediately that, you know, maybe the show or the production company, both of them would maybe need to distance themselves right away. I get that too. So it sucks. I mean, you know,
made it through that whole thing without making a stretch joke.
Ooh. They could easily recast it, and there's, you know, who knows, maybe they will, because he's legitimately a shapeshifter. So if you find like
he could just reshape his face.
Exactly. Yeah. You find like a charming guy being like, oh yeah, I was putting a fake face on for like the last couple of years. This is the real me.
Yeah.
Moving on. They could easily do that. So,
and hope that there's nothing that actor does that's wrong.
That's tricky.
You can only do this trick a couple times.
But,
The Flash has another 14 seasons in it, right?
Yeah, probably at this point, sadly enough.
God, I hope not. I hope not.
No, me too.
Although I do have to just interject that I started watching Stargirl.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it's very much the same formula as all of those.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
But it's weird. It's got lots of cool characters and introducing like and hints of characters to come, like the whole Justice Society, which I love those characters.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'd love to see them pop on the show, but just seeing Luke Wilson in this show is fucking weird.
To say
it's such a he's got
in what
he's
way
like
is set, it weird?
He's what well, I don't want to say he's a bad actor. He can be really good in certain things, but he's very one-note-ish.
Oh, 100%.
That sort of delivery and that approach and how he is. Hey, guys. Like, oh, well, we're going to do the. Oh, now my name's Stripes.
No, that's
like,
that's Owen Wilson. You got to do Luke Wilson. It's slightly lower.
They're both very one-note in a similar way, except one of them says, wow, so well that'll just carry you your entire career.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Joel McHale. Joel McHale's in that too, right?
Or at least well, he might come back. Like, he was Starman.
Yeah.
And it's like it was all in a flashback and he's killed.
Do you think they're going to do like the other Starman?
Oh,
the blue
the
one?
Style or whatever? Yeah.
Probably not.
That'd be cool if they did though, right?
Pretty
right?
Rooted in this sort of thing.
They're kind of doing like the bizarre. JSA as like kind of legacy JSA kind of a thing, right? Is that kind of the vibe they're doing?
Yeah.
I mean, gotta tell you, that actually hits a lot of my buttons. That makes me want to check that out pretty badly.
It's kind of fun, but I immediately bristle up when we have any of these sort of DC ones. Like it's the teen character, and they're dealing with high school, and they're doing this, like, which is fine. But then I don't know, like the teen character is like this immaculate, beautiful person that's. Like,
right,
you know, it's not a regular kind of kid.
It's a CW sort of show, right? So
exactly. So it's like, speaking of shows,
I got I got one more piece of news. So we talked about Batwoman recently, where Ruby Rose had abandoned ship.
Yep.
So the main character of Batwoman has left, and I think it was sort of up in the air how they were going to deal with that situation, whether we're going to recast the role or they were going to replace the character entirely.
Was that even the discussion to start with? All I heard was, okay, who's going to be your replacement?
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden
it was
now
very,
there's
it
this
was
flip.
Very geared towards, it seemed like most of the I don't know if it was speculation or based on what sources might have said, but I think like they were considering recasting the role.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Now, apparently that is not the plan. They are going to allegedly, and I say allegedly, going to kill off the Kate Kane character and replace her with a new character called Ryan Wilder. So they're just going to replace the character outright.
I'm sorry, did you say Van Wilder?
Van Wilder, yes. Van Ryan Wilder. Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds is back to Vancouver, baby. He is going to be Batwoman.
Well, he didn't want to change his Twitter name.
Yeah, that's great. Anyway, so Ryan Wilder, I think, was the name. And apparently they're looking at Vanessa Morgan, who plays...
The Rise of Taj.
Tawny or Tony on Riverdale.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at being the new Batwoman, the new lead character. Which is funny because literally, I swear to God, a week before this came out, she had posted some stuff or made some statements publicly about how frustrated she was with the writing on Riverdale because she felt like every non-straight white character was basically relegated to a sidekick role. Hers being one, who's like a person of color and I believe was either bi or gay. Character on that series being kind of like frustrated with, you know, not getting much to work with. So, right. Like, weirdly enough, she makes that public statement. All of a sudden, it's just like, you could be Batwoman.
We've got this other thing
yeah.
over here.
Like,
would
oh,
you like
we
to
We have
move
this
in?
Empty role that would be a main yeah. character thing that would suit your, you know, the things you're frustrated about. Want to do that? Which feels weirdly almost cynical. But but at the same time, I mean, like, you know, whatever. If it works out, it works out. That's great.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But I just find that, I don't know, I, personally speaking, it's like, you know, I don't know. It's one of those situations where, like, if you recast the role, that's a hard thing to do if it's a main character, I guess, like the protagonist of the show.
Just have Don Cheadle come in.
100%. Nobody would care. That would be yeah. amazing. But, I mean, at the same time, though, if you just be like, oh, the character you followed for the first season is dead and none of anything that character was building towards counts anymore. It's a complete reboot.
Yeah.
A lot of people. All those
diehard Batwoman season one fans. Yeah. I hate to disappoint them all.
Fair enough.
It's all in the writing. It all depends on how they do it.
That's true. So CW bodes well. And that's the news.
Welcome to the warm-up!
I'm starting a new thing called... We do, read this now and stuff, and watch this now. I have, just learned this now.
Oh!
We do read this now, and watch this now, but I have just learned this now.
The famed artist, like one of those major talents that we all know, Wally Woods, is kind of one of those go-to names that artists like from the 80s and beyond have always said, who is one of your favorites? Wally Woods, because he's so influential and so it's amazing art, and he's just been one of those pillar names. I was watching something on YouTube. I went down a YouTube rabbit hole. And somebody was talking about something that he had made. And I guess at this point in his career, it's a little bit later in his career, and he's just getting frustrated, kind of doing the same thing. He just feels like he's just doing stuff and nobody's even paying attention. So he eventually does something else. But before he does this, he makes a piece called, and this is what the YouTube person had referenced very quickly, the Disneyland Memorial Orgy.
Oh.
Which, okay, warning kids.
I may have seen
look,
this. I think I've seen this before, actually.
If you look it up,
can we move you saying warning kids to before you said orgy?
Okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, maybe I'll just say it now.
A quick chop and screw.
Yeah. Okay, just a warning for what I'm about to talk about. This is a little adultish, so here we go. It's the Disney Memorial or Disneyland Memorial Origin.
I'm not cutting any of that.
Yeah, totally. It's exactly what you think it is. I guess because he had worked for Disney. He'd worked for a lot of different companies, and Disney being one of them. And I guess he was not particularly happy. And it's very graphic and very.
So tell me more.
Yeah.
Tell me more. Everyone
you can think of is in this picture. And it's
bizarre. What year was it made?
I don't even know, to be honest.
Okay, because I want to know which, because I mean, is Kuzco from The Emperor's New Groove in there?
No, this is a little bit.
I just looked it
up. We're talking all strictly classic characters.
I just looked it up. Apparently,
I mean,
he's
classic to me.
It was 1967, published by in a satirical magazine called The Realist. I just looked it up.
Oh, okay. I've heard of this.
Yeah. So this is going back there.
No, for real.
I guess around the same time or shortly thereafter, he's doing work with DC, and what I can't remember if it was his inking partner or a writing partner or somebody else, like a studio partner or somebody. He kind of says to them, you know what? I could just do whatever, and nobody's even going to pay attention to what I'm drawing here. And they're like, oh, really? So there was some sort of challenge made, and at the time, he's drawing Power Girl, and I don't know if this is a Superman book or whatever.
Lord.
This is the origin of Power Girl having enormous boobs.
Yeah.
It's Wally Woods who slowly, issue by issue, intentionally makes her breasts larger and larger. So now, later on, it's kind of canon. It's this weird thing, like, why is Power Girl's breasts so big? Originally it was not that. She always had that little like chest window in the costume, but you see in the however many issues it took, like it was like 3, 4, maybe 5 issues, he's making them bigger and bigger each issue until at some point somebody's like, wait a minute, something's up. And as soon as they said something, he just stopped there. And ever since that somehow stuck.
That is insane.
Isn't it?
It's kind of great, but it's insane.
It's kind of a weird, yeah.
I would like very much for someone to do that with Cyclops' dick.
Make old one eye bigger and bigger.
He's just bigger and bigger until someone's like, is he like, what's going on there?
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? That's the perfect size for Cyclops' dick. Just big enough that you notice.
Wally Wood, Godspeed, noble pervert.
What the f***?
All right. So what did we do this week, guys?
Oh. We all watched a fantastic movie called The Spirit.
Yeah.
The Frank Miller helmed Spirit. I've renamed
Frank Miller
movie.
Of RoboCop 2?
Yeah.
The
and
best
only
RoboCop?
That, and only that.
Based on the Will Eisner character, who Frank Miller was a huge fan of, and decided to direct a movie, and this is the movie he was going to direct.
And I will have things to say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Before we get into it, have either of you ever read The Spirit?
Yes.
Okay, Bri's read The Spirit. Merc has read The Spirit. I have not, and I meant to read some in preparation for this. Did not get around to it. Was too busy eating banana bread.
I think that that's a very valuable thing, though, because I feel like whether or not you have history with those classic Spirit comics or not, I feel like it might impact how you take this movie.
To a point, yeah, absolutely. I'm not like a diehard fan of Spirit, and I haven't read tons and tons. I've read
like I'm familiar. I know who these characters are, but I don't have any connection to them.
The Spirit was actually weirdly foundational for me, and I don't really talk about it a ton. But like, you know, I read comics when I was a kid. You know, like Spider-Man's and Ninja Turtles and stuff like that. I read a lot of like X-Men, stuff like that. But there was a point where I kind of like wasn't reading
a lot of the realist.
Yeah. There's a there was times that like
nice.
But when I sort of stopped for a bit, or I was just, you know, not reading them regularly, and I sort of went on a bit of a back issue binge that got me back into comics, where I have fucking remained. And one of the things was finding a number of old kitchen sink issues that were reprints of classic Spirits issues. And I remember I found a few of them, and I was just sort of like, I think I was just flipping through back issues and just like, oh, something about the art just grabbed me. And I was just like, what is this? I've never seen this before. And I grabbed like a number of issues. And ever since then, I sort of was like almost in the hunt for more Spirit stuff. And like that really was one of the things that kind of like made me fall in love with comics again, you know, and then realizing that's like, oh, this is like classic Will Eisner. This is like foundational comic stuff, right? So like this classic pulp stuff. So I'm like, I actually really, really love the Spirit. So so watching this movie was
this film takes it in a whole different direction.
Yikes.
I kind of renamed it as I started to watch it, and I think I saw it in the theater, and then I actually own the DVD.
Christopher.
Yeah.
I know.
I also saw it in the theater, and just so you know,
Bryant,
I can pinpoint the part of this movie where me and my friends who went to see this movie walked out and did not go
really
back. Oh yeah, wow. Big time.
I've never walked out of a movie.
Neither
we did.
I.
We did.
If I've paid, I'm staying.
I know. I generally that's
at least
how
sneaking
I would
into
go
a
now,
different
but,
movie.
But we'll get to that.
Yeah, I renamed it as I was rewatching it. Frank Miller's Jerk Off Challenge Movie.
I literally, I'm not even joking, like an hour, like or 2 hours ago, I watched it this afternoon. I meant to watch it yesterday, but I watched it with Sherry. I'm a wife.
And how'd you do on the challenge?
I'm a wife.
And I was just, it was just like, yeah, I'm like, this is masturbatory, which is just also kind of, because I know that like Will Eisner was one of Frank Miller's like biggest idols of all time. Like he was a fan.
Yeah.
Like he was like.
Yeah,
Will Eisner is like kind of one of the main reasons Frank Miller exists.
Yeah.
So
you get it that he wants to do it well, but at the same time, he did it with a total Frank Miller lens.
There's no Will Eisner in this, like pretty much at all.
No. It's just the base idea, and then
This is Sin City 1.5. Like that's all.
Yeah,
I gotta say,
I wrote down Sin City 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. With some of the stuff. I think Frank Miller, for being who he is and having his style that he does, I think he shows incredible restraint at not leaning fully into Sin City style all the time. It's certainly there.
Yeah.
But it's especially there in the first 10 minutes of the film.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Where there's lots of black with white silhouettes, and you keep seeing shots of, you know, the tennis shoes that the Spirit famously wears.
Like the same like Dwight in Sin City with the Chucks, you know, like the Converse All-Stars.
Exactly.
Like
But apart from that, and a little bit, you know, it comes and goes throughout the film. A lot of it, it's not good, but you could be tricked into not thinking that Frank Miller directed this thing.
Yeah, well,
yeah, there's certain Frank Miller has a visual sense. It's not a bad visual sense.
No,
it's a sense where he doesn't know the consistency of mud. Sometimes you can sink right into mud. Sometimes you just stand on top of mud.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but he's very good at.
Like, sometimes the mud gets on Samuel L. Jackson's face, and it looks like he's in blackface, and it's like, oh, this isn't good.
Yeah.
Why was this a choice?
Little not great.
I wasn't sure to go there. Yeah. But
I think it had to be acknowledged.
He's a comic artist, so he's good at static images. Mm. And it's very good at that. Like, it looks, and he's, the way that he does his art, it's very black and white, stark, like Sin City, the original art, it's all that a lot of his stuff is.
Yeah.
So that just translated naturally to film. But, and some of it, if you just divorce yourself from it being the Spirit, parts are, it's visually interesting, but it's like stylistically, it just
stylistically shits
the bed.
It's that's the stylistically it works really well when it's Robert Rodriguez directing a Sin City movie, which is explicitly in that style. But it feels like Frank Miller was sort of a co-director and was basically learned everything about making movies and directing from Robert Rodriguez on that production and just did the exact same thing. And
yeah,
that's fine. For Sin City, it's fantastic. Like, you can't, like, if literally he just directed another Sin City movie and it was this, great. But that's not the spirit at all.
It's, yeah. And but you know what? I could even be convinced that, okay, if you want to do spirit in this style, fine. But it's like, it's got to be consistent and it's got to flow with the story and it's got to make sense. And it just, like, it didn't know what... This movie didn't know what it was.
No.
Like, it was a campy gangster sex romp arty noir comedic action movie. Like, it was everything all jammed together. Like, oh, all of a sudden in this scene we're doing this, but like, no, now we're this movie. And you're like, what the hell's going on?
Which is weirdly enough, upon rewatching, because the first time I tried to watch it in 2008 when this came out, I got like 20 minutes in and I was just like, nah. And I was with some friends and they were just like, I hate this. I don't want to watch this. And I looked at them like, no, I'm good. Let's leave. And we left and we literally got our money back. And I wouldn't pull that move again. It was a while ago, but yeah, no, we did. Rewatching it now, I kind of appreciate how batshit it is. Like, you're not...
Oh, totally. Yeah,
you're gonna be entertained. This is like, you don't know what the fuck you're watching, but you're gonna be like, okay, I'm on board.
Yep.
I only picked up my phone to Google stuff once during the movie, and it was to look up the cast of Spin City. but that has more to do with... That has more to do with Eva Longoria than anything else.
I mean,
who's that girl in Spin City that's kind of like her?
That'll be trivia.
And that's what I Googled. And that's what I Googled.
The cast of this movie was actually pretty strong.
Very
good. Like, it's...
Yeah.
For the most part. Not that
they all delivered. Some of them weren't even in Spin City.
What's his name from the Wonder Years wasn't, was he?
Oh, yes.
Man.
And I did not make that connection at first. Like, literally, I was watching with Sherry and like...
Oh, I immediately.
She said like, it's like, who's this Ed Asner looking person? And I'm just like, who's this Ernest Borgnine looking person? And I'm just like, did Ernest Borgnine and Ed Asner have a baby and it was the dad from the Wonder Years?
I actually wrote down like when I got near towards the end where they kind of... They do the flashback and tell him dying and what happened, and he rises from the grave. So I write down, so he dies, he revives in a coffin, he digs his way out, then he goes for a walk.
A very bright coffin.
Then he goes for a walk and a think, and he thinks, where's the dad from the Wonder Years?
Yeah.
And then approaches him and goes, how do I be a better cop? I'm like, what? Like, you just revived from the dead, and that's what you're going to do first? Is be like... I need to be a better cop. I'm going to be some weird vigilante thing. Like,
there's so many things about the direction of this movie. Like, sometimes it works. Sometimes I'm just like, it's very clear that, like, Frank Miller doesn't really 100% know how to direct a movie. Because you had that thing of him, like, I went for a walk, and it's all, like, you know, caption speaking. But the visuals aren't really saying anything. There was, like, a big red void that he's walking in front of, which is, like...
Yeah.
There, you could easily...
Again, that's the Frank Miller visual thing.
I
like,
know,
oh, here's
but it's
red,
like,
and I know, but it doesn't
work. The whole idea
work
of him and his city is supposed to be a thing. Like, him walking through the city is basically, like, risen from the dead and, like, sort of not knowing his place in it. There's so many visual things you could have done, and instead he decided, nothing. Visually, let's do nothing at all. He goes and talks to Dad from the Wonder Years, and he's, like, talking like Denny Colt at first. And then he sort of, like, at the end lands at him being, like, the spirit. And, then, like, his face is completely in shadow. Like, the lights behind him, you don't see his face the entire time. Yeah. And I'm just like, that would have been a really good cue where maybe you see his face as Denny. And then as he lands on him being the spirit, maybe, like, the sun moves or he moves and he goes into shadow. And that would have been, like, oh, that would have been, like, visually showing that he's changed as a character.
Yeah.
But, like, nope, none of that. So many moments in this movie were just like, oh, if you just did one thing differently, this would have been awesome. But you just didn't know. You didn't know what you were doing. Yeah. But okay.
The narration alone
awful.
Was horrible.
Yeah.
And a lot of the dialogue.
It was just Sin City. Yeah. It was just like that overwrought Sin City, which works great if you're doing that specifically. If you're Robert Rodriguez doing that specifically. You're right. It was.
And in the morning, I'm making everybody eggs.
Oh, yeah. The eggs. Oh, my God.
No egg on my face.
Yeah. Not a glob. Like, oh, moly. Yeah.
It makes me not want to eat eggs because I don't want to think of their globiness.
And I mean, frankly, part of me, I don't know, should we like break it down from beginning to end, or should we just go down this train? I don't know what we should
do. I don't think we should break it down completely because it's really... it's gonna take too long to do that.
I will give a lot of kudos. I actually appreciate Samuel L. Jackson just going for it. Like he's just like
he
I'm just
totally
gonna...
just embraced that and went batshit crazy.
And it was the weirdest. Like is he and Scarlett Johansson and the bald clone henchman. That was like total like 60s Batman on like just hallucinogens, hard R, messed up meth head Batman 60s style. And for this movie, I was just like, oh, that's extremely entertaining. That's awesome.
Yeah. Adam West on mescaline.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing too, is like that character, like I think, I can remember the moment I walked out. When it happened, it's when I think Samuel L. Jackson, like I think it was Samuel L. Jackson, pulled like a giant wrench out of the mud and hit the spirit in the nuts.
Yes.
And then the spirit just tackled him and punched him in the face with like the most cheap.
Oh,
comedy.
I was counting the punches. It was at least 12.
Yeah, it was like 48 punches with like the same exact. Like almost comedy punch sound effect, like it was like a joke.
Yeah,
for like it felt like ten minutes.
That must have been before Samuel L. Jackson got back up immediately and then hit him with a toilet, so he was stuck in a toilet.
Literally broke an entire toilet over his head.
That was the behind him thing where he's like looking to one side, then he looks to the other.
Yeah,
yeah, like Bugs Bunny.
Dong. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really the key of this movie. It is the stupidest cartoon ever made.
Well, and I get it. He's trying to like embrace the kind of campy comic bookiness, but it's like, and we've talked about it many times, just the idea of taking source material and translating it, like that sort of stuff does not, and especially dialogue, does not translate well. Like the stuff that he was saying in the narration and a lot of the dialogue might have worked really well if it's just written and you're reading it, but hearing it say out loud, oh, it's brutal. It's like this
should not come out of someone's face. It's embarrassing.
It is totally embarrassing.
And that moment right there, like after the toilet, I was just like, all right, I just Jerry Seinfelded out of that theater, frankly. But I, weirdly enough, like it was still dumb and awful and like the least spirity thing I could imagine. But at the same time, I'm like, I appreciate the camp way more now than I did 12 years ago. Like way more.
This is essentially Frank Miller's fetish phantasmagoria. It's just.
Yeah, that's very, very fair.
Man, just like creepy old guy director, like every. You could just see him off camera, like, okay, just do one more take. And it's just, like, every movie utilizes sexuality and beautiful women, whatever. But this is, like, it gets really uncomfortable. And then it also just, even dialogue and stuff, like, that beautiful broad, she was beautiful. Beautiful. Like, written by
Donald
Trump or
something. My city is some tarted up whore.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Come on.
The part with his monologuing about how like the city, like he wants to fuck the city.
Like it's my lover, but also my mother.
But also his mother, very clearly, very specifically.
An Oedipal complex about the city.
Yeah, wasn't great. But yeah, there were a lot of lingering shots that you just know there were like endless takes of.
Yeah, And how many times do we have to keep going to the well about Eva Mendes' perfect ass?
Yeah. Well, especially the part where, like, didn't she, like...
And what are they not talking about the death in Wonder Years' perfect ass?
Didn't she... It's I'm perfect. Pretty, didn't it's she a... photocopy it in that one scene before she killed somebody?
Yeah, well, she photocopied her butt and then...
I gotta say...
That joke two or three times and then did it again.
Gotta say, I do not remember that from the Will Eisner comics. Personally,
imagine that.
Weirdly enough, but here we are.
Sexy dentists and Nazis.
Yeah.
Dentists.
Dentists and Nazis.
Yeah.
Because he wakes up and he's like, "Something smells dental," or like, "Something smells dentist," and he's got the little spit tray thing, and yeah. What is going? And then you're like, oh, then full on Nazi.
Well, of course, it's Frank Miller. It's always Nazis.
Yeah,
100%. It's the thing too about Samuel L. Jackson as the octopus, because in the original comics, as I believe I recalled, like the octopus was like kind of a, almost like kind of a not like a Blofeld exactly presence, but a presence. It was kind of a faceless presence.
You like a Dr. Claw.
He's Dr. Claw. You don't see his face. He's very mysterious. And this movie decided to go the exact opposite direction, where not only do you see him, not only is he just camping it up 24/7, he's got costume changes every 2 seconds. Like, the one in particular where it was just like, Frank Miller, just, god damn, just calm down. When him and Scarlett were having their, like, a weeb play date where they were, like, dressed as, like, samurai or something, like, ninjas, and were, it literally had, like, the rising sun thing going on and, like, anime effects. And it was just like, yeah, okay, Liz, Frank Miller, I've read your comics before. I know you've got this weird Japan fetish. I get it. But that was particularly self-indulgent.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, Scarlett Johansson does have a history of playing Asian, so what are you going to do? Pardon me.
That was the sound
of Merc committing seppuku.
She was not that good in this. I like Scarlett.
Yeah.
She has a certain acting ability that works. Can be amazing. She can.
Do you think was that good in it, though?
Well, but like Samuel L. Jackson at least embraced it.
Samuel L. Jackson, like,
maybe he was at least having fun.
He rocked.
Yeah, because he's like, I'm getting paid. I'm getting paid. I don't care.
Go back and watch it, and then don't watch the whole thing because that's not a good idea. But get to the point where Scarlett does her first few lines.
Yeah,
they're brutal. Like, it would sound like me acting. Like, I can't act. That is not what I could do. That is not my skill.
And she can be fantastic, but it's much like, I think, any good, otherwise good actor in, like, a Star Wars prequel, where, like, literally they're acting against a green screen and there's nothing for them to play off of. They don't have any concept of the space they're in or even who's anywhere near them. So it's very difficult. And I feel like some actors...
There's that,
Some actors have that skill.
It's just the tonal delivery,
But, I mean, again, I feel like that's kind of antithetical to, like, how a lot of actors just work. So I feel like, you know, the way they made this movie, exactly the same way that they made Sin City, where there's, like, no sets at all, you're not going to get people's best unless they, you know, are particularly energized for this exact fucking thing like Samuel L. Jackson was.
Yeah.
They had, like, specific product placement flip phones, like Nokia flip phones that were
also Aquafina water.
Aquafina water. Yeah, exactly. But everybody talked like they were out of the hard-boiled 30s and dressed like it. Like, it was, they were doing a thing. And I get it, like Batman animated series where it's sort of a combination of certain time frames. Except that was well thought out and worked.
Yeah. Again, that's the, like, it's 17 movies in one. Like,
yeah.
Just pick a direction and you got to go with it. You got to embrace it. Like, a little bit combination is fine, but when you're trying to do too much, it just, it comes off hackneyed and just you have no idea what you're doing.
The spirit should always
evidently
exist.
Doesn't so
the spirit, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, should always exist in like the late 30s, early 40s. Like, it should always be a period piece. They should not try to do some weird thing with it. Just own that it takes place at that period of time, and that's the world. But, you know.
I would like very much for us to try to sum up the plot of this movie in 5 minutes or less. I think we can do that.
Like, say what the Spirit. Plot of this movie is.
Yes. Spirit, slut cop.
Yes.
Yes. True. He is a slutty cop.
He is true.
Oh man. Just
That's why you see all those people dressed as the Spirit for Halloween.
Yeah.
Treating every woman horribly. Yeah. Oh my god.
Well, I think he's treating them very nicely.
You think that?
If only he, you know, had a one-track mind. Well, it's... I'm going to delete... This is a tweet that I'm deleting.
So, okay, like, to sum up...
Whatever happened to him gave him brain damage. Right?
100%.
Like, yes. Like, yeah, he's got brain damage.
You saw how he was talking after the toilet got broke over his head. He was talking like he was severely brain damaged. It didn't get better.
They were both talking like they were drunk.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if Frank Miller's ever been in a fight before, but it doesn't make you drunk.
No.
That's not how it happens.
Frank Miller really wants you to think he's been in a lot of fights, but he hasn't.
He got in a fight with his hat stylist.
Take
that, Frank Miller, taking you down a peg.
I did look up this while I was watching on IMDb. And it sometimes has the little trivia bits underneath. Apparently, in some article, when he was being interviewed later, Frank Miller did say that he yelled cut instead of action during Paz Vega's action scene because he was so distracted by her costume.
Frank!
So the plot of this movie...
Ugh,
yeah.
God.
The plot... Okay, plot of this movie... dead cop...
Alive cop...
dead cop, live cop.
Yep.
I love that. No, that's
done.
The plot of a different movie.
Okay, dead cop, Samuel L. Jackson, Godblood.
There's Godblood. What's in the other container? Like armor?
That's Jason
the
and the Argonauts, the Golden Fleece.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Or you'd have to ask anybody in a Quentin Tarantino movie what's in there. Oh, shit! Samuel L. Jackson!
But basically, Sans Serif, who is like this international jewel thief, steals the blood of Heracles and the Golden Fleece. And the octopus, who is Samuel L. Jackson, shoots
the case
that is holding the two. And they lose one in the river.
Yeah, why were they in the river? Why was she stealing it in the river?
God only
so
knows.
So that they could do those really good underwater effects. That was clearly filmed underwater.
She's got her mouth wide open.
Yeah.
The water makes your hair move very quickly like it's in the wind.
Like it's in wind, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a very cool PS2 game they filmed this in, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a love interest who's like a thief, and later on he dies but comes back to life, and then he's the guardian of the city, and apparently in the meantime he's been with every woman in the city and has some sort
of
connection.
Well, like he was with the police chief's daughter, who in the original things was his wife. I believe.
I'm not sure about what they might have been fiance. I think it might have been fiance. I could be wrong.
Okay.
But they were very strictly like in the comics most of the time.
No, but I mean, wasn't the character who was like the, you know, head medical lady, wasn't it the police chief's wife in the books?
Oh, you might be right about that actually. Yeah. I feel like they'd probably conflated.
And they just changed it up so that...
And they, you know, modern times, they probably wanted to make Ellen more of the, you know, part of the action, more so than just being, like, the commissioner's daughter, which might be a little different.
Fair. Okay.
Though at the same time, it felt like in the old comics, it was more, there was a lot of like the femme fatales were a constant thing, but it didn't feel like the spirit was just, you know, horny. It felt sort of like he was roped in with these femme fatales all the time. It was just sort of like trying to make the best of it in an affable kind of a way. And he's like, you know,
yeah.
Right. misunderstandings yeah, with Ellen and stuff like that. And less so him just being like, I'm going to just give all of you the spirit D. He just seemed way, way aggressively hornier in this movie than I remember from the comics.
Yeah.
And that's 100% Frank.
Well, I think we summed up the plot of the movie. We didn't.
If you can read between those lines.
You know what, You know what, though? We tried. We tried our damnedest.
Yeah, are we done?
But you know what? Like, if you divorce it from the comic.
And you have
and
to.
Just look at this. And you have to. And just look at the story that is given. It's not bad. It could be workable.
Yeah.
But it's so jumbled that it just doesn't make sense.
Like you sort of get what they're doing, because I think there was a different character that was tied to his origins. So like, oh, okay, well the octopus is kind of like the big bad, so let's make that the octopus. And I guess we're doing a movie, so you got to make the octopus more of like a presence, blah blah blah. Like I get all of the decisions that were made to lead to this point. But
it just became a stylistic.
It led to this point.
Thing. Yeah. Yeah.
The end sequence, like, you literally have a Samuel L. Jackson with, like, just machine guns and, like, a helicopter with, like, chain guns and everybody shooting.
Yeah.
Like, over
the
top.
Yeah,
the
Apache helicopters in 1930s.
Yes! Yes, exactly.
Well, like, that was sort of cool. That was part of, like, I thought it was interesting where the doctor lady was like, you know, where are you? I'm in Metro City or Central City. And what year is it? Oh, it's this year. And like, that's kind of cool. Like he doesn't know how fucked up he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it could have been like, I'm not the person that you think I am. I'm like her daughter or granddaughter sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which would have been interesting to do, but they didn't.
No. There's so much there. Like, that entire sequence was just such a really...
Then they made out.
Just a terrible Xbox 360 game that just was decided to be this movie for 10 minutes. But I was entertained.
Yeah.
Yes, and I got banana
It
bread.
Has a certain... Not charm, yeah.
All right, well, the sun is setting... Literally.
It's getting
dark.
Sun's going down, big guy.
That's right. Sun's getting real low. So why don't we wrap this episode up for this week?
Sounds like a good
plan. And we'll continue it in part two of our coverage of the spirit. Never.
Never.
All right. Who are we?
You go ahead, Mr. Merck.
All right, Merk. You can find me at merkasylum.ca, MERKASYLUM. Merk on Facebook. Merkanaut, like astronaut, on the Instagrams. Not really anywhere else. I guess that's it.
I'm Bri Kotick. You can check me out in comic form, but not me. It's the comic I do. Listen, I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Welcome to hereafter.com. That's the comic I do. And that's all I have to say right now.
And I'm Kyle Lees, and you can check my stuff out at thekylelees.com. That's all. Do it. Bri is holding a toy. What is it? Ooh, it's the White Ranger.
It is. Sorry, it was right there in front of me, so I grabbed it.
That's fine. I'll just grab what's in front of me.
It's a watermelon.
I have Willem. A watermelon.
Watermelon Defoe.
And that is one of my favorite. If you ever go to like a fancy restaurant, get the watermelon Defoe. It's horrifying.
Yep. It's you eat it and then it wants you to avenge it.